Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. With me today, I have the Senior Development Manager at Marks & Spencer. He's an international keynote speaker, author, all the things. And he's a really, really smart guy when it comes to digital project management. Welcome to the show, Sam Barnes.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Now, you're going to be with us in Vegas at the Digital PM Summit, which is this October 15th through 17th. So it'll be good to see you again.
Absolutely, yeah.
When was the last time we saw each other?
I think that would be the last one in Philadelphia. So
okay, there you go.
I think so. I've only missed one summit. I've spoken at them all other than the last one. So
yep, there you go. Well, you know, we made a lot of mistakes on the last one, Sam.
That was my choice.
Number one, not having you there. We should have really forced that.
It looked great. You'd probably send me over the edge, though. I find speaking quite dramatic, as most people know. So it was nice to have 1 year off, as it were.
Oh, there you go. I mean, I would love to get a year off, not from the summit, but just from life. You know,
yes,
just,
agreed.
And I need people. That 1 year sabbatical.
Away from people. I love animals, not a year of animals, but people, yes. Yeah.
Just walk out of the woods, unshaven, looking horrible, and go, I'm back. That'd be amazing.
I couldn't go without Wi-Fi for a year.
And this is the world's worst transition, but that would be back to the basics, Sam.
It would.
If I were to just go off and live in the woods. So you're going to be talking about the basics when it comes to managing projects. And my question for you is, how many digital PMs, at least, this is interesting. Joe Rinaldi and I were talking recently about business development. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how there was this first wave of shops that started right after the bust, right? Like in early 2000s. And then there's a new wave of shops. How many in that first wave of digital PMs actually had any training?
None, I would say. If they had any training, it was in a project management discipline that probably wasn't too appropriate. I mean, that's why I even met Brett and talk at the summit, essentially, all the way back then, that I was working for a digital shop, the first generation you talk about, and I was just looking for advice because everything I read online about project management it just wasn't relevant to what I was doing. I mean, I worked for a small digital agency at the time, you know, 10 people. You know what it's like. It's there when you're fighting for business, doing the pitches and, you know, managing projects, and no one really knows what they're doing, to be honest. And so I was looking around for just sort of any advice, because there I was. I mean, I didn't even intend to be a project manager, of course, as very few people do. So, you know, I had no knowledge, really. And I was facing these challenges on a daily basis from my team, the clients, the bosses, you name it, with nothing other than my brain. And sometimes you need some help, right? So I was just looking around online, anywhere, anything to do with project management. But there was tons of project management stuff, loads of it. But it was all, you know, your Prince 2, your enterprise IT. It was just, there were bits you could pull out. And I followed a few blogs at the time, like PM Smart, I think, was one. But generally, there was just nothing. So, yeah, I mean, I started writing, not really thinking anything would come of it. You know, but it turns out the gap that I had spotted really was a gap. And, you know, that's how it kind of started. I mean, nowadays, I think you can look around and find tons of advice. I'm just in awe of the people. But back in the day, there was nothing. There literally was nothing. And I mean, there was, I think that's when I first started listening to the likes of the Boagwell podcast, you know, in its early right. days. I think I listened to yourself a few times, or definitely read some of your articles. But there was just nothing, literally nothing. And therefore, everyone was making it up as they were going along. And I think a lot of people fell back onto what they knew, which was at the time, I guess you could say, more print-based account management, project management mechanisms. But while that got you so far, as technology changed, as clients changed, it just became more and more invalid. And there needed to be a more tailored, more specific digital project management element to all this advice. And it turns out, I think, that while the fundamentals of delivering things, I think, remain reasonably static, we've really gone off now onto another tangent of whatever it is we do compared to those IT Prince 2 type project management community and their methods.
No, I would totally agree. And I think the first wave of digital PMs, and I hate to include myself in that, it was by default. I couldn't code. I couldn't design. So what was left was to try to manage everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I read Web Redevelopment, Kelly Goto's book. I read, you know, some of these things that were very much on process. Yeah. But there wasn't much on the management of that process and all of the little nooks and crannies of difference, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was quite a lot coming out at the time on design and development. I think Smashing Magazine was a really big, prolific leader back then. You know, I mean, and to be fair to Vitaly and the gang, they're amazing because even then they were doing like a spread of design development, but also some delivery, some process stuff in there. But as things that kind of tend to or try to go across all the topics, it kind of never really went as in depth as I needed it. You know, so yeah, it was. It was a really interesting time. I mean, in a way, dare I say, I think I kind of appreciate it now because I learned so much, you know? I just had to read so much and learn so much just from blood, sweat and tears at times. But I see people coming up now and I think that, you know, you may meet project managers or scrum masters or even product owners, whoever it might be, and they're not that they have gone through some kind of course. They have come up through, they've grown up in a generation or a time when there's enough to read that you don't have to learn the way we had to. And I'm not sure if that's good, bad, or just different, you know, up for debate, right. I guess.
Well, and you were actually, you got a degree in some form of computer. I can't remember now, but I know you started as a front end developer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually left school and went to as in the UK college, but I left there not knowing what I wanted to do. So I fell into kind of like manual labor jobs for a good 2 to 3 years. It was only as I kind of grew up and I basically, there was this box in my dad's room, right? And it was the computer. And that was all I knew about it for many, many years. It was a box that just sat there. And I think one day and I'm really not like technical in this sense. I don't know what possessed me to do this, but we didn't have a modem cable and I spliced a traditional UK phone cable that had two ends and two duplicate ends and a duplicate ended modem. I spliced them together. Somehow I suddenly heard that famous 56K modem awful sound. And my brother exclaimed quite loudly, "That's the internet."
Wow.
So I was quite intrigued by this. Then I found out quite quickly that you had to pay for it. I genuinely thought it was free. So, you know, and I'm 21, 22 at this point. I'm not a kid. All I remember from it is once I kind of got on ISP and got online, I was just absolutely fascinated. It was the first time I think in my life I'd found something that I thought I love this. I want to do this as a career. So I kind of played around on it for a while, eventually realizing that I wasn't going to get a chance to do this kind of thing as a career without some kind of evidence, right? I quit my manual labor jobs, went back to live with my parents, which was, as anyone who's done that in their mid-20s will know, it's very, very painful. But I'm lucky, very lucky I could do that because that meant I could go to the very local, not such a great university where I did my computing degree. It was Web and E-Business, it was called at the time. I think it's called Information Systems in the UK now. But that was it. I mean, all of these events that led me to that point in my life, I think was almost fate because I wasn't mature enough to study when I was, you know, 5 years before that. Hence why I didn't. Hence why I ended up doing what I was doing. So I had kind of hit this university at the right time. Really, really enjoyed so much of it, you know. And it was a range of subjects. It wasn't just coding. It was meant to cover, give you a foundation, everything right from sort of business right through to networking and then coding and so on and so on. But when I left there, I was absolutely adamant I wanted to be a programmer. You know, I'd seen Richard Pryor in Superman and that was it. That was my inspiration. Honestly, I remember that vividly. That was a moment.
Fractions of a penny.
And war games.
If we could just steal fractions of a penny.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've admitted this publicly before. After I saw Richard Pryor in Superman doing what he did, I went upstairs to my ZX Spectrum non-connected computer and, of course, tried to control the weather. And I was probably too old to be doing that at that point, but I was living the fantasy. What can I say? I wanted to be a programmer. I didn't know which kind. I'd enjoyed just coding generally during the course. And I was at my first digital agency. Finally got a chance at a digital agency. And I was like content entry. It was just, you know, using a CMS, but I was loving it. I've still got my very first Photoshop banner I made all those years ago. I've still got it saved because I remember doing that, pressing save, sending off and thinking, I cannot believe I just got paid for that. That's just considering that for the previous sort of 5 years, I've been working 6 days a week, all hours fixing power tools. You know, it was a very, very different world, right? For a lot less money, I might say as well. So yeah, I was a content entry. Then I taught myself front-end development because I needed to get out of it. And then it happened, Carl. Then I opened my big mouth and I thought I could organize things a little bit better. So what was happening at the time was, again, I talked about the period of time that was, and you had a lot of account managers that were born in the print world, and a lot of the agencies still were doing print as their core business. So absolutely, I was receiving essentially Photoshop files to build the front end templates for, integrate it with a CMS, and they were just like the worst possible files to build from. You know, they were designed in they weren't in pixels, they weren't even, it was just every possible thing that you could do wrong. It was like that. So I thought to myself, with a bit of training to the designers who are predominantly print designers, we can probably speed things up, which will actually make things better for me, better for everyone else. And that was it. I've identified that as the moment, Carl, where without knowing it, I'd made that transition from not just coding. So if anyone's out there coding and enjoying it, just keep quiet. It's my advice. Keep quiet.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned feeling like, I can't believe I just got paid for that. Yeah. I remember we finished the first engine website. We got a check for $5,000, and I remember walking to the bank going, sucker. Right? Later, amazing. I found out we should have charged probably $15,000. Once I started understanding who the sucker was.
But you know, you could have charged more, but how happy were you? That's the key thing, right?
So it doesn't matter. Happy.
My banner is terrible. It's for, not only was it a banner on Photoshop, but not, you know, but it was for, I think it was for Call of Duty on the Nokia N-Gage. It was just it was a gaming banner, and I was just, this is just unbelievable. Still got it. I should post that up somewhere. It's terrible. It's got to use all the Photoshop defaults, all the bevels and everything. Nasty.
That's still amazing, though. So how did you, like, when you're thinking about the basics, the basics of digital project management, how do you go about sharing that? Because I know you also do some digital PM training. Obviously, you do workshops, things like that. Mm-hmm. How do you determine what it is you should be sharing with people who may not have been trained?
Well, so this, the talk I'm going to do is, it really comes back a level than even projects, I think. So I didn't know what it was going to be when I started putting it together, but what it's turned out to be is really basics for just working with other people and leading teams, I think. So, and I think project management actually sits one level above that, really, because to be a good project manager, I think you have to sort of know the basics about working with people. I think that's probably one of the mistakes people make. But what I've tried to do with this talk is really pare it back so that it's agnostic from how you work. It doesn't matter how you work. It doesn't matter what size company you're in. These really are basics. I mean, a lot of the tips that I give, they can be used in businesses that have nothing to do with digital. Nothing at all, you know, pizza delivery companies, you name it, you know.
Right.
The way I work is that I always make notes, right, throughout my working week. If there's something that happens that annoyed me, or I thought was good, or I had an idea about, or I would have done different, or whatever, or someone taught me something, whatever it might be, I kind of just make a note of it in a little note file. And when I come to put talks together, I kind of will always look at this, because it's where, you know, my whole life is as such. And often I'll have an idea there of what I want to talk about. So I've done one on introverts before, and it has a very core topic, and I'm going to pull out bits of that. But what I found was, over the years, I'd picked away at these notes that I was obviously still adding to, and what was seeming to be left out were things that obviously weren't targeted to digital project management, obviously, because that's where I predominantly speak. But then I thought, well, actually, why? You know, because these are the things that, I mean, I'm now basically running a team of engineers, so it's a bit different to project management. But these basics, they remain. That, you know, like getting back to people on time. You know, it sounds like such an obvious thing to say, right? But it's so often missed, and I think I say in the talk, it's probably one of the biggest things I see busy leaders making, the biggest mistakes I see busy leaders making. And yet, it's because they're busy and they're leading and they're doing 100 different things. I think what you forget sometimes when you climb the ladder as such is what it feels like to be on the other side of that. And I've noticed a lot of people, I've been on both sides of that now. So I can both talk about, you know, what it's like to not get that quick feedback from a leader. I can also talk about how it's so easy to miss that kind of stuff when you're that busy, you know, but at the same time, how a core part of your leadership is not neglecting that side of things, because it's just as important as the next sale. Maybe not as tangible on paper, but as valuable nonetheless.
Yeah. You know, That is so insightful, especially just, I mean, it's basic communication. Yeah. And whenever you have a problem on a project or in life, even, it seems like it always comes back to communication.
Always. Every single communication and people, you know, technology and tools will come and go, but it's always the same. And I think that's where I kind of why I wanted. So there was a part of me putting this together that thought, is this going to be really not so much relevant for the audience, but are they going to listen to it and think, well, it's kind of obvious, you know, it's kind of common sense, because when you're being told something, it sounds common sense. But if you actually then sort of lay that over your last month and how many things you did do or didn't do, you kind of see, while I'm sealing this very expensive deal or launching this exciting project, in the process of doing that, there are these 5 to 10 basic things I didn't do that some people would just see as sort of common courtesy, other people see as professional, that actually, while we got everything launched or we got the sale, my team or my client have been affected in some way. And I might not be able to see that yet. That might just be, but it's never quite enough to cause a reaction at the time. These are things that, if you don't do them or if you do them badly, they build up over time. And some, you know, I'm sure you've had this yourself when people leave a company or a team that you're managing, and when they sort of explain why, sometimes they reel off things that you didn't even remember or weren't even aware that you've done, and yet you can hear their experience of that and you can't really argue with it. And you may have even experienced it yourself before and felt down about it, and it's kind of quite humbling and disappointing at the same time. So, you know, I mean, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes on all the points that I'm making, but it's just my little angle on what we can do differently, because we can talk about methodologies till the, you know, for eternity, but get these things right and I think everything else seems to go okay, because people tend to enjoy working with you that little bit more, and that kind of underpins whatever it is you're doing with other people.
And the thing about common sense is often you have to be beaten in the head or have it shoved down your throat. Yeah, because exactly. You know it once you've heard it, but you forget to do it. And I remember reading a study on doctors in the States, because when you start thinking about those that were getting sued for malpractice, they were doing all this research. And what they found was the doctors that got sued for malpractice weren't the ones that made the most mistakes. They were the ones with the worst bedside manner.
There you go then. I didn't know that. That's amazing. That's a really good way to explain it. Yeah.
Yeah. It really, and I remember at Engine, we had a, you know, once every quarter, we'd send out a survey to clients, ask how it was working with their team. And we got feedback, and at the time, designers, developers, everybody was working directly with the client. And we got feedback on one developer, and the client said that they absolutely loved working with him. And we got feedback on another developer. It was a different client. And they said they, you know, she didn't get as high marks. Mm-hmm. And when we started boiling it down, she was actually a much better developer. Yeah. Her work was better, all these types of things. But when we started really drilling into it, he would always send a thank you email after the client had sent some information. He would say, "Hey, got your message. Just wanted to say thank you. Yeah. I'm on it." She never would. And so she would, and her response was, "Well, that's because I'm going to jump in and start doing the work." And it's just like any critical communication, somebody has to know that you received it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's again, two really good examples there of exactly the kind of things I'll be talking about. It's amazing the difference that they make. That's kind of the point of the whole talk, is that while they seem like little innocuous things that either most people assume you just do anyway, or there's a couple of things in the talk that actually I start out talking about, and I preempt the fact that people are going to listen to what I'm saying and think, come on, Sam, this is a bit over the top. You know, this is a bit too detailed and organized in sort of what is should be an organic social interaction. But it's because of the reasons you just said, it's the result. So I'll give one thing away. One thing is that I will always add a reminder when one of my team is off ill, and I'll add a reminder to check they're okay when they're back in work. And most people hear that, and while you put the admin and all the paperwork aside, most people hear that and think actually adding that to your to-do list is, you know, weird. That's over the top. And I can understand that perspective. Like the words that I'm saying sound like that, but I'm very much like you just said. What I found over time is that it's such a little thing to do and so obvious that actually no one logs it, which is fine if you remember to do it because, you know, you generally care about these people. But do you know what? You know, there's times when your busyness coincides with someone coming back to work and you may just forget to ask. And you don't mean anything by it. But they may not even realize you haven't asked. But when you do ask, when you constantly, you know, clearly care about your team and the people that work around you, it just makes a huge difference, not only at that time, but over the course of however long you work together, if you maintain it. So my justification is, yes, it is a bit weird. It is a bit over the top. But the result is too valuable for me to not or to forget to do, you know. So it's really making the point that these little things that you just talked about and I'm talking about, the value that they have to other people and the business results, the commercial results, it's surprising is what I'm saying. It's very surprising how many of these little things that actually make a big, big difference to people.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about a time. So I worked at a traditional advertising agency for 14 years before starting my shop. And I ended up in charge of account service for a while. And the people in account service didn't like me, mainly because I was their boss, but also because when their team, like if the team had to stay late to work on something, I would make them stay late. And I would say, look, you're part of this team. And if they have to be here, then you need to go get pizza and beer or soda or whatever. And they need to know that you're here too. Because as soon as they're working and you're not there, we get this us and them thing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that one.
And that is just huge. Yeah. So, I'm excited to see you again.
Yeah, same, Carl. Same. It's been too long.
Yeah, and definitely excited to listen in on the talk and just find out more about what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, we'll catch up as we always do. But I'm looking forward to just coming to the summit again is just very exciting for me. So as I say, I've been at them all other than last year, and there's that thing where, do you know what, I still stand by my decision because I just needed that time for myself. But reading tweets from afar, having been so involved, you know, don't forget we were there in the first one at you know, it was all very small and unknown, and to see what it is now, it's I know, you know, it's incredibly, I feel, as I said to you, humbled and proud to have been a part of that. So to be there again in Vegas with no doubt an even bigger crowd, and you know, with the speaker lineup you've got, it's just, I keep looking at Brett and yourself and looking at you, waiting for you to sort of catch me, you know, hang on a minute. You helped us get it started, but we'll get the professionals in now. That's how it feels. You know, the imposter syndrome kicks in and all that.
And you know, imposter syndrome is such a human condition that don't worry, we'll all have,
so I saw some stuff from you recently on that. Yes.
Well,
I think
we'll,
you're
all
right.
We'll all show up in Vegas and just sit there looking at each other going, I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. Same as every year then, yeah?
Pretty much. Well, everybody listening, thanks so much. Sam, thank you again. And we will talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.